Hello, boys and girls. Thank you for tuning in to the Big Honker Podcast. We really appreciate all of the downloads. We crossed a million a month or so ago, but that's a big deal. It's a big deal. People are tuning in. It's looking like the quarantine's starting to end, so people are going back to work. That's always a good deal. But we do. We appreciate everybody that's listening, and we hope that everybody's staying safe in these crazy times. This podcast is brought to you by the one and only Stanfield Hunting Outfitters. Look no further. Give us a call today. Talk to Jeff, 940-658-3172.
Or StanfieldHunting.com or look us up on Facebook at Stanfield Hunting.
It's hunt booking time. It's May now. Hunting season's going to be here before you know it. You need to get on the books. Books are open, Jeff.
Yes, they are.
Always. 24/7. Look us up, StanfieldHunting.com. Follow us on Instagram, StanfieldHuntingOutfitters.com. Blah, blah, blah. We're also brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries. Get skinny. Get skinny. You want to have a successful 2020 season, 2020 hunting season? You need you some Dive Bomb. Go to DiveBombIndustries.com. They're coming out with stuff left and right. They got floaters coming out in the not-too-distant future.
Specs Hawks.
Spec socks. Well, they had those, but these spec socks have their heads up. They're constantly coming out with something new. Something new to change the game. They're the best silhouette on the market. They're the best Silla sock on the market. They're what we use, and so many outfitters across America have made the switch to silhouettes, and they are using Dive Bomb. DiveBombIndustries.com is the way to go for 2020. We're also brought to you by Boss Shot Shells.
Only takes one.
The hardest hitting shotgun shell out there right now. It's a culture. They've created a culture over there. All American made. Everything. Every component that they put into these shotgun shells. Made right here in the USA. Right up there in Michigan. They're doing a hell of a job. They're killing the game. BossShotShells.com is where you can find them. They'll ship right to your door. No big box stores. None of that stuff. Keeps the cost low. And it comes right to your door. You don't even have to get out of your underwear, which is a lot of people aren't doing that now that they're still under quarantine. They get up, stay in their underwear. So when you're surfing the web, go to BossShotShells.com. Get all your shotgun shells for this coming season. Also, if you're turkey hunting, I would highly recommend you get some Boss Tom in your life. Reach out there and get them. And we're also brought to you by Lucky Duck, the 2x4 blind. The way to go. It's comfortable. It's roomy. You can pack four people in there. It's got nice amenities. Got a little pocket for your coffee or water or whiskey, whatever you got going on there. I don't know. But the Lucky Duck 2x4 is the way to go. They've also got spinners. In case you didn't know that, Lucky Duck is known for their spinners. They're what we use. They run on a remote. You can put them out in the goose spread. Geese come in, they don't like the spinners, you can turn them off. Ducks start flying, you can turn them back on. Easy as that. LuckyDuck.com, or look them up on Instagram. Lucky Duck Premium Decoys on Instagram, I think is their handle. Good stuff. Good stuff. We're also brought to you by Pacific Calls. PacificCustomCalls.com. They've got some great turkey calls over there. Got some in right now. They're the mouth call that I use. Good stuff. Their duck call, they've got a lesser goose call. It's really good. They pretty much got it all. Big geese, little geese, ducks, turkeys. If you need to call it in, I would look up Pacific Custom Calls. Get what you're going to need. Good guys over there, too. Real funny. And we're also brought to you by the Looking Glass Duck Club. New to the podcast world. I think, what's their podcast? It's just Looking Glass
Duck Club. The Looking Glass Duck Club.
You can find it wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to the great guys over there, Logan Pyatt and his buddy Rebel. They got a bourbon tasting weekly type of episode. It's a lot of fun to listen to. So
it's a man's podcast.
It's a man's podcast. They've also got sweet looking hoodies. I've talked about it before. Looking Glass means a guy perched up shooting ducks and got a scope on his gun. It's a fun little hoodie. Don't take it too seriously, but a lot of guys I see on Instagram are getting these hoodies. So you can find them on Instagram, Looking Glass Duck Club. Get you a sweet little hoodie, and then you can also listen to their podcast. It's Looking Glass Duck Club, wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also brought to you by J2 Outdoors, maker of the J2 Ice Ripper. Don't let Mother Nature put a halt to your season anymore. Use the J2 Ice Ripper. Keep your honey hole open. Keep it from freezing over. Water is the water's king.
Best bait in the world.
If you open don't water. Have water, if you don't have water, you got nothing at all.
Ain't no waterfowl if you ain't got no water.
Nope. Locks up, bird ship out. Don't let Mother Nature fuck you over anymore. Go to get the J2 Ice Ripper. I think it's J2OutdoorsLLC.com. You can get you one. They've also got a stimulus sale going on right now. $550. Get you one of these ice rippers. I think that's right to your door.
Shipping tax, everything, I believe.
That's $100 off. Said it's going to be one of the best sales that they're going to do all year. So if I was you, I'd jump all over it. J2OutdoorsLLC.com. Last but not least, my favorite sponsor that we got, William and Chris Wines. Don't let the quarantine blues get to you. Have you a nice bottle of Skeleton Key or any other type of wine. All Texas made. It's delicious. They can also ship to your door. If you look them up, williamandchriswines.com. All made there in High Texas. You can find them at Central Food. No, I fuck this up every time. Whole Food, Central Markets. All the fancy little restaurants, not Walmart, okay? You got to go to a high dollar supermarket to find these things. But great wine pairs good with pretty much any occasion. WilliamandChrisWines.com. Also, look them up on Facebook because they do virtual wine tasting. I think like once a week, twice a week. It's a lot of fun to watch if you're a wine guy. That is all of the sponsors. We made it through. All right, this episode of the podcast, we are joined by the man himself, Mr. Sam Soholt, recently moved to North Dakota. He's a turkey hunting fool right now. He's just laying the smackdown on Longbeards up there. Great guy. Puts his money where his mouth is. The stuff that he's doing for public land is unrivaled. I mean, there's nobody else out there that's doing what he's doing for public land. So hats off to him. Always a pleasure talking to him. He's got it going on. He's got it going on for sure. He's a good guy. Here he is, Sam Soholt.
Jeff, can you hear me pretty good, Sam?
Yep, I can hear you.
All right.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Boom, and welcome to the Big Honker Podcast brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries. I'm Jeff Stanfield.
I'm Andy Shaver. On the line today, we got the photographer sensation, Mr. Sam Soholt. You're in North Dakota now.
I am in North Dakota.
When did you... Last time we talked, were you in Montana?
Yep. I just moved back. My wife took a job at the hospital in North Dakota, so kind of back to my roots where I went to college.
Where do you like Montana or North Dakota better?
Montana. It's not a super hard toss up. I mean, there's a lot of great things in North Dakota. Don't get me wrong. And as far as being a sportsman, there's a lot of opportunity to do a lot of cool stuff. But just something about being able to look at the mountains and be elk hunting and antelope hunting and everything every year is better, in my opinion.
Yeah. So it's been a little bit which state has the worst winter, Montana or North Dakota? Or are they about the same?
Oh, North Dakota has a way worse winter.
When did you move back?
Right in the balmy time of December.
It's always a lot of fun moving your shit out in December.
Time to just right. I think when we moved into our place, it was -17.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. Mm. So it was great.
How do you keep the house warm in that?
Oh, you just spend a whole pile of money on natural gas or propane. Keep the heater rolling.
Jeez.
Do y'all have heated floors there? Don't you?
Heated doors?
Floors.
Oh, floors. It depends. Like, we don't have heated floors in our place, but there are a lot of people that will put them in especially in like the garage or like a shop. They'll throw in a heated floor so that way they don't have to burn, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds of propane every winter. Yeah.
What's it do? Just run hot water through tubes in the floors? Is that how that works?
Yep, exactly.
That's crazy. Yep. So, living in Texas, yep. You don't think about shit like that. We need right. refrigerated floors 3 months out of the year at least.
Right. Yeah, a little different climate down there.
So how has the quarantine affected you? What all plans did it put the kibosh to for you?
Yeah, it's been weird. You know, typically in the spring, it's kind of like shaking the dust off of everything and you hit the road again. Tend to do a lot of different states for as far as turkey hunting goes, and typically have at least a few shoots lined up for the photography side of things or just work that I'm doing for clients while I'm on my own trips, whatever it might be. And so I had, so far I've had three scheduled photography shoots canceled, and then I have really not been traveling all that much. We made one trip out to Montana with the van in early March, but that was kind of before everything got shut down. And since then, I've basically been within about a 100-mile radius, trying to get out and just spend as much time in the fresh air as I can. But yeah, typically I'm gone, you know, 2 weeks of every month traveling and either hunting or shooting photos. And it has not been like that this spring. So it's been strange.
Now, were these outdoor photo shoots that you were going to do, like for like outdoor companies, or was this like private stuff?
Yeah, no, it was outdoor. It was outdoor shoots. There was I do some photography for the Cabela's Signature Outdoor Adventures, and so actually all three trips that got canceled were through Cabela. So I had one Kansas turkey hunt that got canceled, a Mexico turkey hunt that got canceled that was supposed to be here in about 10 days, and then I had a trip to Bolivia in June that was scheduled, and that got canceled.
What were y'all going to do in Bolivia?
Dove hunting. Yep.
Where were y'all going to go in Mexico?
I'm not exactly sure on the location, but it was going to be Gould's hunt down in Mexico. I don't think it was super far across the border. But yep, that one got shut down too, as you know, the border is currently closed.
Oof. Mexico scares me. Jeff's all about going.
I love Mexico. Great people, great food, beautiful country. Just a few drug cartels is the only problem.
It just scares me.
I was pumped to go. I've actually never been to Mexico, if you can believe it or not.
Where were you going to go to there?
I don't even know. I hadn't even got all the details on the trip. It got canceled before I got any information about the outfit we were going with or where it was going to be.
What's the turkey they shoot that's on the Yucatan?
Oh, the oscillated.
Yes, and that's the one that they shoot them out of the roost, don't they?
I think it depends. I think you can do a little bit of both. But, yeah, they look more like a small version of a peacock than they do a turkey.
I'm going to tell you what, that area like around Cancun and that whole region up there, you're going to sweat your balls off because it's hot as hell. But that is some thick, thick, thick shit. And I couldn't imagine the freaking how big rattlesnakes must be down there.
Yeah, I'll pass on that. I don't. None of that sounds very good.
Do y'all have timber rattlers in North Dakota, or is that too far north?
No, we have prairie rattlers, and it's mostly further west in the state. But it's we definitely have plenty of rattlesnakes out on the prairie.
I almost sat on one. I had a turkey hunt last week, I guess, and I told the guy, because I always sit away from the guy about 10 feet. And now with the corona, mm-hmm. that's the way you're supposed to do it anyway. So I tell him to sit down, and I was going to sit at a tree maybe 10 feet away. And it didn't look right. It looked like something had been there because there was like branches and shit piled up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. So I was going to pick a different tree. I was going to walk past that tree and just go to a different tree. And I heard I heard tick, tick. And I thought, oh, fuck, I know exactly what that is. Looked down, and I was in grass about knee high, so he didn't really jump out at me at first. And then he started going back towards those sticks, and that fucker was about 3 feet long. And
Man.
I carry a snake charmer with me, but since he gave me a warning, I gave him a pass. I wasn't going to kill him. he was kind and gentle to me, so I returned the favor. But
that's, I think that's a good way to do it. You know, you just like, you just make sure it's a balanced relationship with Rattlers.
Yeah. And it was, I think the guy was the client that I had, I think he was more, shook him more than it shook me. You could tell the next place we sat down, he definitely walked around his tree a couple extra times to make sure nothing was nothing was sitting there. But it's just what you got to deal with. They're out there.
Mm-hmm.
So It looks like on your Instagram, it looks like you're having a pretty good turkey season.
You know, it's been pretty good. I focused first on getting my wife a bird and ended up being able to do that on her first hunt out, which was fun. Wasn't quite textbook like I had hoped it would be, but she made a good shot on a bird at about 40 yards, a little 20 gauge, and dumped that one. And then I've killed a couple birds, and then I got my dad a bird as well. So it's been a fun spring so far.
You've got what's the cart that you carry out there, and what all's on the cart?
Oh, so my dad got it in his head that he wanted an easier way to haul ground blinds in and out. So we've done a couple different renditions. The first rendition was a golf bag like cart, one of those like three wheeled carts you strap your golf bag to, and so we had the blind and the decoys and chairs and everything strapped to that, and that actually works pretty good. And then someone in the comments said that a jogging stroller works pretty good too because the wheels are a little bit bigger. And so my dad gets a little crazy, so he went on Facebook Marketplace and bought three jogging strollers to try. And we tested that one out last weekend, and honestly, it did not work quite as well as the golf bag, like, specific carrier, because the wheelbase isn't quite as wide. So I think on, if you're hunting a lot of road systems or whatever, you know, or like, flatter, like, field agricultural-type stuff, I think the jogging stroller would be real nice, but any sort of like tall grass or inconsistent terrain, the golf bag carrier works better.
What? So the jogging stroller just bogs down in your type of terrain, just in the grass.
The problem is it ends up being like too top heavy.
Oh,
and so as soon as you try to, if you hit a bump with one wheel, like it wants to tip over. It just didn't work quite as good as having that wider, like, lower wheelbase.
That is infuriating. When I'm in the airport and I've like got luggage stacked on top of one another, and you feel it starting to fall, I get a burning sensation in the pit of my stomach, and it just pisses me off. I couldn't imagine having all my turkey shit out there and it just starting to go.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, you know, there'll probably be a few more renditions. Maybe we can find one of those jogging strollers with a little wider wheelbase, or maybe put in a different axle so it's a little wider.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
There's no shortage of what you can do.
No, you got all the time in the world now. how do you turkey hunt? Do you use a full fan, like a Tom decoy, or do you use the Jake?
Yeah, I typically use just a Jake and a hen, but that's mostly because I like the look and like the effectiveness of like a full fan, but man, it's just a pain in the ass to carry into the woods. So I typically just go with either, Dave Smith has a, like that half strut Jake, which is super nice.
Mm-hmm.
Put that like over a laying hen, and it has proved to be super deadly. Otherwise, Avian X last year came out with that HDR Jake, and that one, worked pretty well for me last year, but, yeah, typically just like a Jake and a hen has worked the best for me. Later in the spring, I think that full fan has a little bit more effectiveness when the birds aren't so henned up and they're in a fighting mood and constantly looking. And, I think just having something to flag them down with works a little better, but it's such a pain to carry that fan in and out of there with that bigger decoy.
Now that HDR, is that the one with the heads? You can, swap out the heads, or is that this year's?
Nope, that's the one. Yep.
That's the one.
Yep.
I'm behind on the times. I've got I got the same turkey decoy from about 5 years ago. It's a it's the quarter strut Jake from Avian X. It works good. But
for sure.
Have you noticed where are your birds at right now? Like I think our toms are a little bit more quiet right now because I think Jakes are starting to beat up on them a little bit.
Yeah, they it's been such a late spring up here that the birds have really been, like, it's been slow, like the, you know, like full on is has not quite hit yet. They've been really hemmed up, and honestly, up until even a few days ago, I was still running into stuff that seemed like more like a winter flock than it was, you know, like typical turkey hunting when you're chasing whatever a bird or two in an area. You know, there'd be 15, 20 birds in the roost, and so it was tough. You know, it's a hard call to, you know, whether you want to call to them in the tree or not. I typically don't. Like, I'll start calling when they hit the ground, but even now, like, sometimes I won't even call until if it seems like they're going away from me just straight off the roost. But, you know, if you start calling to them right when they hit the ground, sometimes you get that hen that's like, I don't want to deal with another hen.
Yeah.
And she'll just take the whole flock away from you.
Yeah, that's why, you know, a lot of guys get so gung-ho for opening day. The opening weekend is actually one of my least favorite times to go out because there's just so much competition and you're not going to compete with a live hen that doesn't want to deal with you because she'll just take them the other way.
Yep. Yep.
And but guys, they want to get out there right away. And I'm like, listen, give it a couple weeks and then let the Tom get a little bit desperate and then he'll come right to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually super excited for the next 3 weeks here to finish up the season. In the past years, it always just keeps getting better all the way through these, the middle 2 weeks of May is just perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Down here, there's kind of always a mid-season lull. It seems like the toms kind of go quiet because the jakes start ganging up on them and you'll start seeing big bunches of jakes running around. And I kind of think I think we're towards the end of that, but I'm telling you, if you can get a tom, like there's no competition. There's no bad influences. It's just he realizes the hens are done, and then he'll come searching. And I think down here they're more vocal this time of year too, more responsive to the call.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. That's my two cents about turkey hunting. We've actually got people this weekend here, so should be pretty good. I was out this morning listening for them, and now the wind's so tough right now you can't hear anything anyway.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So the van, when did you buy that?
So bought the van in early September and then basically immediately drove it to Pennsylvania to have the four-wheel drive put in by Quigley.
So September.
And then early September, and then had the four-wheel drive done and then didn't really do anything on the build in the van all fall just because we're using it for different hunts or whatever, but just took the seats out and had it real simple. And then started on the build, ripped all the interior out in January, and then if the quarantine hadn't happened, I was going to be out in Colorado a few times. It's out at my brother's place and we were going to work on it together, but since I haven't been going out there, he's just been kind of picking away at the build. So we've got quite a bit done on it now, but I haven't been out there to shoot any photos of it. He's been filming it as he goes to keep up with showing kind of the documenting the build of the whole thing. But it's turning out pretty cool.
So what's the end goal with this van now? How's it going to be compared to the bus? Is it going to be kind of the same situation where you can sleep in it, or is it going to be something totally different?
No, same kind of a similar concept. So we'll be able to sleep in it. Completely going to use. We're either going to retrofit the tent that I used for the bus to fit alongside of the van, or we'll build something custom again. We'll have basically a full camper overhaul on it, and it's good, but like way more capable, obviously, than the bus because of the four-wheel drive system and a little bit smaller platform to work with. It is a badass rig.
And I assume it gets better gas mileage than the bus.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Have you ever buried the bus? Like stuck it?
No, I am terrified to do that because I have no idea how to get it out of somewhere where if it would get buried.
Oh, it would be expensive too.
Woo. Yeah. So I've done to the point where there's been times where I'll like park the bus and walk down the road a couple miles. And see if there's even spots to turn around, or I'll hop in a buddy's truck to like scout a road. I'm very, very cautious when it comes to driving down that bus down anything that might even be questionable.
I never thought about backing that son of a, trying to turn around. There ain't no way you turn around a freaking bus on a dirt road.
No. I had the only time I had anything kind of sketchy happen, I was elk hunting with a buddy who had drawn a tag in the Black Hills of South Dakota the first fall that I had the bus, and it snowed like 6 or 7 inches and then melted, and so the roads were kind of sloppy, and I was like, oh, okay. Well, I looked at the map, and I was like, I can go up here, take this road out to the north instead of like cutting all the way back down through Rapid City and whatever. And I started going to the down the road, and it kept getting worse as I went. So I was like, just trying to keep the bus right in the middle of the road, so I was on the crown, so I wasn't getting pulled either way. And I was, at that time, I was pulling a utility trailer with a four wheeler on it. And so, like, finally, I found a road that I could pull up just far enough where I was able to get that whole rig turned back around. And, you know, it ended up costing me like 2 hours of driving if I would have just gone the route that I should have gone first. But, fortunately, the roads weren't any worse than they were, and I was able to get out of there without burying it in the ditch.
And you said you had a trailer on too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yep.
That'd have been.
That's a lot of work.
You can't back that out.
Have you ever had some sketchy people where you're camping at night come up to you?
Have I had people come up to me?
Sketchy people. Because, you know, campsites have been known to keep serial killers and rapists and stuff around. Have you dealt with any whack jobs come up to you?
No, I haven't dealt with any wackos, thankfully.
Nothing, yep. Never on your time on the road, never had anything sketchy happen to you?
No, really, I've been super lucky. Haven't had anything crazy happen. The very first night I ever stayed in the bus, I woke up to police lights outside the bus because apparently I couldn't park in that location, and he escorted me to a different spot where I could park. But other than that, man, I'm super lucky. I haven't had anything weird happen to me anywhere.
See, that's always my big. I always watch, you know, you see movies and shit like Devil's Rejects, and they're just fucking nomads and get you at a campsite.
You know, if you look up serial killers in national parks, there's a bunch of people been murdered in national parks.
Just don't look it up, and you don't have to worry about it.
But
Sam,
that is true. That is true. There's tons of missing people that were at a national forest that they've never seen before.
You know, I don't think I need to look that up.
No.
I think I'm just going to go about my life with my rose-colored glasses on and assume that doesn't happen.
You're going to be in the middle of nowhere somewhere next year, and you're going to get this thought, and you thought, that fat sumbitch in Texas told me there's somebody might kill me out here, and you're going to be thinking about that the whole time. So what kind of adventures did you go on this winter?
This winter was pretty low-key. You know, normally in the winter is kind of show season, so typically I'll go to ATA show, SHOT show, a couple of them just to kind of, you know, keep contacts up and stuff. But man, I decided this year that I just wasn't going to travel nearly as much, and I did, took a trip down to Southern Arizona for a coos deer hunt with Randy Newberg and his whole crew, and that was in early January. That was super fun, and then, we took the bus and the van down to Minneapolis for Pheasant Fest, and that was it. That was the extent of the travels this winter, which was really a nice change of pace. Now, little did I know that there was going to be a quarantine and I wasn't going to be able to travel this spring, but you know, to not having to go to I think where it was Indianapolis this year for ATA show and back to Vegas for SHOT Show, it was a good change of pace.
We're scheduled to go to Vegas in July, June or July. I don't know if we're gonna make it or not yet. They said they're like putting plexiglass like cubicles up around all the blackjack tables and shit.
Well, that'd be boring.
Oh man.
So I don't know. Vegas might be a different town after all this.
The bullshit at the table is what makes blackjack fun. I mean, that's you're taking a lot of socialists out, but she might as well just play home on your computer and play then.
What's Pheasant Fest like? I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it's obviously Pheasants Forever puts it on, and it's a traveling show. So like, you know, they'll do it in either Minneapolis, which is where their headquarters are. Sioux Falls is one of the big states or, you know, cities that they'll do it in. Chicago kind of rotates around, but it's another, you know, conservation oriented sportsman show. Super cool. You know, there was like a little over 30,000 people that came through this year. It's always in mid-February. And, yeah, it was cool because they did the public lands pavilion. They kind of, like, sectioned off this area of the show. And everybody who was in that area was, like, when we all signed the contract, it was we were going to give at least 10% of the proceeds that we made back to one of their Build a Wildlife Area campaigns. So we actually just sent a check to them for, it was more than 10% of what we made, but it was the $5 from every item that we sell. So we sent them, it was like $2,300 nice. From that show to that one of their Build a Wildlife Area campaigns where they buy private land and then open it up to the public.
Where are they doing this at? Just in Minnesota, or are they doing it all over?
So they're doing it all over, but that chunk that we helped pay for was in Minnesota.
So do they come in and do they like make it habitable for pheasants, or is it just kind of you can hunt whatever on it?
I believe it's like open public hunting to whatever, but what they typically do is they'll do like a habitat analysis on it and then, you know, increase habitat for certain species. I mean, it's, you know, typically the goal is to create more nesting habitat for pheasants, but obviously that helps regardless of the species that's going to help.
That's really cool. And I wish more organizations did that. Buy something, fix it up, and then hand it over.
Yep. No, they do a good job with it. They've been doing it all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I think if more hunters had land that they could get on where the hunting was actually going to be pretty good, I think that our numbers would turn around. I think that's the biggest driving force in the decline in hunters is the fact that they can't get on land that's going to be worth a shit without paying an arm and a leg.
Yep, I agree. It's just back in the day when I think we've evolved as hunters too, where a lot of us will travel a lot further to go hunt different areas. And so I think, you know, the number of people that knock on any person's door has increased, even though the number of hunters has gone down. Back in the day when you used to be able to, knock on a door and have a pleasant conversation with, you know, whoever owns the land and they'd let you walk around and chase critters, that doesn't exist as much anymore. It's still possible, but it's the barrier to entry, especially for new hunters, I think is probably like would seem overwhelming. You know, it's been so long since I was a new hunter but trying to look at it from the outside looking in, like there is public land, but like where do you even start when you're trying to figure that out? And there's starting to be some better resources for that type of stuff, but man, just it's just a daunting task trying to figure that out on your own.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine being thrown out and just say, okay, figure it out. Especially like right now, even though we got so much technology and Onyx does a wonderful job, it would be so overwhelming. And then, you know, you got this, for me, I've got kids, and that changes your perspective on everything because I've taken my 5-year-old turkey hunting sometimes, and if we don't get a bird, you feel like a failure because, you know, you're this dad and you're supposed to kind of know everything, and he kind of puts you on this pedestal, and I couldn't imagine like having my kid and trying to figure out where to go on public land and it just being a total failure every time I go out.
Right.
So I feel bad for a lot of these guys. What your Stamp It Forward, how did that go this last year? Was 2019 was the first year you did that, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. No, it went awesome. And I was trying to think back the last time I was on, I think I was, you know, touching on the fact that people just, we all need to buy additional duck stamps. Mm-hmm. It evolved into the Stamp It Forward project, but man, it blew up and it went way better than I could have even hoped for. We ended up buying, just over 1,000 duck stamps. So we raised $25,000 for the, you know, that goes 98% of that goes directly towards either purchasing more wetlands or increasing and, you know, upkeep of habitat on the current wetlands that the, you know, federal government owns through the refuge system and all of the waterfowl production areas and that type of thing. So yeah, in, you know, that first year with kind of rolling it out and winging it, it went really well.
So for people that want to get involved in it, cause I'm assuming you're going to do this for 2020 since 2019 was a success.
Yep.
What do people need to do to help you out or to let you know that they've participated in this Stamp It Forward?
Yeah, for sure. So this year we're going to do it a little bit more streamlined. So last year I just put out a video and basically asked people to send me money through Venmo or PayPal, and then I used all of those dollars to go out and purchase duck stamps. And so this year we will have a, obviously the 2020 duck stamp has been announced, but it's not for sale yet. So we will have a website where people can go and donate, like basically a direct donation, and with multiple, you know, different avenues that they can send money in. And I'm not 100% sure when we're going to kick that off. I'm trying to work with a bunch of companies again to get them involved as well. And so as soon as that all goes out, obviously I'll send you guys a link to the page and how people can help. But yeah, it's gonna run it the same again, where if people are willing to send us money, we will use every single dollar that we raise to go and buy additional duck stamps. And then last year, what we did to basically leverage that money into more conservation dollars, we started giving away a duck stamp with every item that we sold on our website. And then obviously every item we sell, another $5 goes back to conservation. So it was a way to kind of not double the money, but increase it by a pretty decent percentage.
Is anybody else doing anything like this right now? Like you're balls deep in making sure that public land is not only preserved, but also like built upon. Is anybody else, you know, has anybody else taken this campaign on?
You know, there's other companies that are doing similar like models where they're giving back a certain dollar amount or a certain percentage of everything they sell back to different organizations, but probably not as crazy as we've gone with it, as far as like being willing to just like throw it all on the table and even though, you know, like obviously we make less profit by doing that, but the fact that we're able to help these different organizations not only with their project but then inspire people to go out and do, you know, similar concepts has been a pretty cool thing. So I like to think that we've helped people like just kind of make that leap into like, oh, maybe we should give back a certain percentage of what we make along the way. Hopefully we've, you know, been able to show people that it's a good business model for everybody. But I don't know, I guess I'd have to do more research. I don't know of anybody who's kind of gone about it exactly the way we have.
I mean, it really is inspirational to see, you know, anytime that anybody kind of puts their money where their mouth is, you know, a lot of guys can flap their gums and all this other stuff, but like you've legitimately put your money where your mouth is and you're making a difference in the world.
Trying to, you know, definitely still feel like a small fish sometimes when you look at the ability of companies like, you know, Yeti or whoever it might be. They can, you know, write a $20,000 check to a, you know, a single organization, where we spent an entire year and raised, you know, $40,000 for conservation last year. Sometimes you still feel like a pretty small company, but it's been cool to, you know, when you get messages back from people like just saying thanks for what we're doing, and, you know, or people saying, hey, I finally made the leap and I joined this conservation organization, or I went out and I helped with this project to, you know, dig a pit to bring water to this area, whatever it might be. It's been cool to kind of see the response to just really preaching how important it is to be involved with it all.
Yeah. So your shirts, I really like all of your shirts. You come out, every month, is it a different, like, is it just every year it's the same animal, or how does that work? Are you coming out with different shit all the time for your t-shirts?
No, yeah, just coming out with different stuff all the time. Trying to, you know, just trying to make sure we're hitting as many of the different segments of the hunting population as we can. You know, and then eventually we'll probably work our way into kind of the fishing category so we can kind of get more blanket sportsmen involved in the whole concept. But, yeah, just, you know, mostly just sit around and when come up with an idea, my brother and I will pitch stuff off, you know, and bounce stuff back and forth. And typically after a few rounds of an idea, we come out with something that kind of is a meld of both of our concepts that we have in our head. And so it works pretty good, but it's been fun to just try to be creative about different shirts and different designs and different, you know, segments that we want to try to hit. It's been nice, really, like, you know, like with like the Meat Co. shirts, it's been nice because people really like that concept. And so we're able to switch up the animals and try to hit those different segments. And, just, you know, have more of like a series of shirts rather than just always a one-off.
I'm fucking jealous of you because we just got a new shirt and I designed it and it took me months to figure it out. I couldn't imagine coming out with a different shirt every month.
It can definitely be a pain. And like, I am not good at graphic design, nor is my brother. So we've been lucky to, you know, we've had like five different guys that we've worked with over the past, you know, few years, where each of them kind of has their own style and be like, oh, this guy's really good at this type of concept. And this guy's really good at this type of concept. And so we'll be, you know, we'll pitch the idea to one of them and say, this is what we're looking for. And then, they've just been knocking out of the park is trying to take our ideas and put them on paper. It's a process, you know, typically from like concept origination to like actual t-shirt. I would say a lot of times is, you know, 4, 5, 6 months by the time we like release it, because it's just, you know, you're like, okay, well, we have this idea. Now we finally have like the vector file. Now we need to make the slides. Now we need to make the inventory. Now we need to come up with a way to launch it. That's not just like, oh, we have another t-shirt.
Yeah.
I feel your pain, man. It's not just sit down and launch a shirt. It's a labor of love.
Well, now I don't feel so bad because it did. It took several months of me just like bashing my head up against the wall. Like, how am I going to do this? And then, I finally got everything done, got the graphic like I wanted it. And then the t-shirt guy sends me a message that he sent me a proof of it and it looked like shit. And he had to figure out how to print it. And I mean, it was just the whole process was a nightmare. And then Jeff, because these shirts have done really well. Jeff tells me yesterday, oh, we need to come out with another one in 6 weeks. I'm like, there's no fucking way.
I'm looking at the banking account end of it. Andy's looking at the work part of it.
But these t-shirts have done very well. But when he said that, like, I got a pit in my stomach. There ain't no fucking way we're going to come out with a different one in 6 weeks. Like, just forget it.
Yep, man, it is a process for sure.
So what do you have? I mean, with everything up in the air, like, on a normal year, what would your fall plans be?
You know, yeah, on a normal year, typically, you know, doing two, maybe three hunts a month, starting in later August, kind of all the way through the year. And, you know, typically start with antelope and then elk, late August going into September. October is usually the month I reserve for archery mule deer hunting. And then November is all whitetails, and then try to sneak in at least a few waterfowl hunts in December. But this year, the plan is to go to Alaska and moose hunt in September. I was talking to my brother this morning, and I actually need to do a little bit more research because there's been some talk of limited seasons and limit, you know, like, I know on Kodiak, at least, we're not moose hunting on Kodiak, but there was a thing about the bears, bear hunting, and they had already been putting in some like limited restrictions for the spring of 2021. And so I want to make sure that borders are going to be open and we don't have to quarantine for 14 days upon arrival. And, hopefully going moose hunting this fall, but, probably try to run it, you know, other than the moose hunt, probably try to run it pretty similar as long as travel restrictions aren't in place. So probably, you know, an antelope hunt in later August, and then we'll have the van at the Overland Expo West, mountain, event in Loveland. As long as that event happens, you never know. Either moose or elk hunting in September, mule deer hunting in October, whitetail hunting in November, and then chasing ducks and geese in December.
What do you use to get go after moose? Do you use a rifle or a bow?
I'm gonna rifle hunt on the moose hunt.
Does anybody shoot them with a bow?
Yeah, lots of people.
Oh yeah,
do.
Yep, yeah, a lot of people do.
I don't think I have the balls to.
That's
do
a mean ass animal, boy.
I think archery hunting a moose would be really fun. But I really like the efficiency and like the fact that I don't have, because everything's so thick in Alaska a lot of the time. So, you know, a lot, like, you got to be under 20 yards, you know, a lot of times on moose when you're trying to kill them with a bow, just because of how thick the alders and everything are. And I don't want to have to deal with being that close to an animal, and just to have the opportunity. I'd rather be able to, you know, spot one from a distance and sneak in and try to get to a little bit of a high point just to get a shot on something. I'd be way more comfortable with a rifle. And not to mention, you know, you're walking around in bear country, and I like having a rifle over the shoulder rather than carrying a stick and a string.
Have you ever bear hunted with a bow?
I have not. Nope. I've filmed a few brown bear hunts, but they were all rifle hunts. But I've never gone archery hunting for a bear.
You ever seen, is it Tim Wells that shoots a grizzly between the eyes with their bow?
Yeah, that sure was.
Yeah, it's amazing. Drops that some bitch just boom right there. But that took some kahunas, boy, because if you mess up by a little bit, you're going to be a bear turd by the next day.
Yeah, and he even said, like, on that hunt, you know, like, in the video or whatever, he's like, I didn't mean to shoot a right in the head. It just, you know, like, that's all I could focus on when it was that close.
Well, and, you know, with a bow, and if things are as thick, you know, like you're saying, you have to wait for the perfect shot on the animal before you can release that arrow.
Like, right.
It has to be perfect. It has to be perfect placement. With a rifle, you can get away a little. You know, it doesn't have to be as perfect of a shot to drop the thing. I can't imagine how far these fucking moose are going to run whenever you stick an arrow through it. And then you got to go find the damn thing.
Yep. Yeah. So, no, that's, you know, all those reasons is it's a good reason to have a 300 Win Mag or whatever caliber you feel like carrying into the woods after a moose.
Yeah, no shit.
Yep.
Is this a hunt that you've done before?
I have only ever done photography on a couple different moose hunts. And so I've never gone hunting for them myself, which is, you know, obviously a big draw. I've wanted to shoot a moose for a long, long time. So hopefully this is the year to get it done.
So how does it work when you get the moose down? I mean, is it just get as much meat as you possibly can, as fast as you can?
No, it's so same concept with any animal, like any big game animal. You you know, drop a moose and you're going to quarter it out and pull you know, all the meat off, and then hike it back to camp and try and keep it cool on, you know, either sink it in a creek or in a lake or whatever, you know, in garbage bags or whatever it might be, depending on how long you're in for the hunt, or hang it up if it's cold enough, you're going to hang it in the tree. Or hang it high enough away from the bears to keep it cool. And then you'll fly it out or, you know, horseback it out, whatever type of hunt that you're doing. But, yeah, it's just, you know, it's the same process as any big game animal. It's just a lot more of it.
See, I'd be worried about a bear getting on it right away. Or whenever you pack out the first load, come back and there's a fucking bear eating your carcass.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the, you know, definitely a risk that you run. Typically, like, it doesn't happen unless there's a bear like super close in the area. You're not going to have a bear on it with, you know, within an hour or whatever. It's going to take them a little while to smell it, you know, get downwind of it and smell it and work their way in. So hopefully you have the meat off of it by then, but you never know. You just never know.
See, but you're used to this type of shit. Like me, if we shoot a deer, we throw that fucker in the back of the pickup and then we got a processor that we take everything out of. Like it's no big deal. You're used to packing shit in and out. It'd be a process for me.
It's a, you know, it's a process for everyone, but I think you just realize that that's part of the task. And you just start to get to work. Like, you know, like hunting, I love hunting, but like, man, it's a pain in the ass to carry animals out. But,
fuck yeah.
You know, like the last 2 years, I've got a spot that I mule deer hunt. And I don't know if I'll ever go back in there, but it's a 6 mile walk into the area. And then, 2 years ago, I shot a buck in there, and my buddy and I, he was filming all my hunts that fall. He helped me, carry my extra gear, and I just carried the whole deer. And then this year I went in solo, and it was freezing cold when I went in. So I had way too much gear. You know, just trying to stay warm, but I ended up shooting a nice deer and then had to pack the whole thing out solo, but not a chance I was going to make two trips. So I think my pack was, you know, between cameras and lenses and, tripod and then the deer itself and, like all my extra cold weather stuff. Like, I think it was like, I don't know, probably close to 120 pounds on my back, hiking that out 6 miles. So that was a long, long pack out, but, I made it.
So what time of day did you shoot this deer?
So shot him pretty early in the morning. Oh, you know, I think I left. Yeah. I think I left the truck or left the van at like, man, what time was it? It was early. I started hiking at like 3:30 in the morning or something like that.
Jeez.
And hiked in, and then I shot him. Oh, it was probably like 8:30 in the morning. And then had him, you know, photos and broken down and everything. Took my time, and got him all broken down. And then I think it was about, it took me 3.5 or 4 hours to pack him out. Up there, I would walk for 10 minutes and then sit down and try to rest and then walk, you know, keep trucking.
That would suck so bad. I've shot turkeys a long way back, and the walk out, you're just like, Jesus, when is this going to be? I couldn't imagine a fucking mule deer over my back.
Yeah, it's type 2 fun, you know, it's just a different type of pain.
And then, I don't know, like sitting down might make it worse, because then you're like, shit, I got to stand back up eventually.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. Your legs start to cramp up, and you just, you know, but like at the same time, you know, it's painful and you hurt for a few days, but like that's, you've never felt like, you know, like when you sit down to eat that backstrap or eat, yeah, you know, a burger from that deer or whatever it might be, you've never felt like you've earned that meal more.
That is true.
How far in do you think you'll be on the moose hunt?
You know, I think it's going to be important for us to set like a limitation on how far we can be from camp when we kill something. Because there's not, I mean, when you look at a moose, like, man, quarters on that and stuff, it's a completely different ball game. I have no idea what each quarter weighs. I would imagine a hind quarter on a moose has to be 140 pounds. I have no idea.
An Alaskan moose will weigh 2,000 to 2,500 pounds. I saw some guys shoot one in the river north of Fairbanks one day, and they could only clean one side of it. They couldn't flip it over to clean the other side.
Yep.
So they ruined half the beef. They only got half the meat, I mean. But
man,
if it's a 2,500 pound animal and you field dress it, you're going to have it down to probably what, 1,600 pounds? Maybe a third of the body weight is gone.
Right.
So you have 1,600 pounds. So a quarter's got to be 300 to 400 pounds, probably.
No, not that much.
I have no idea. It's a lot. So? It's giant.
I don't think so. I don't think it would be 300 or 400 pounds.
if
you had 1,600 pounds, I mean, that's
60. So if you divide it in force, it'd be 400.
Yeah, but you've got other shit that you're going to take too. Your back straps are going to be there.
You
got to
pull all that shit out, though.
No. I understand that. I mean, you're still going to have a heavy weight, but I don't think the individual quarter will be that much.
Even if it's 250, God,
that's
almighty.
A lot. I mean, God, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, regardless, if it's a 200 pound quarter, it's giant.
Well, and I would be afraid of shooting it too far back and sun setting on me.
Oh, I'd want to shoot the sun bitch right next to the road, like a paved road where you're right there.
Yep.
Because, I mean, that's something that you got to consider. You don't want to be back in the bush in the middle of the night. So, really, like, you got to set a limit on how far you go and what time you shoot this animal.
Yeah, but you always got that guy right. You hunt with, and he's like, just go to the next mountain, the next mountain. And then that last mountain, you shoot something, and then you're like, shit, we got three mountains to walk over. And that's some hard walking up there.
Yeah,
and you sink down to your balls on every step, and it's just ugh.
Yep,
and you got to worry about a bear eating you.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a miserable time, but it should be awesome.
Oh, it would be awesome. It's beautiful up there, absolutely beautiful. Yep.
There's no telling how long that meat would last you. I mean, shit, that could last you a year or more. Just that one animal.
Oh yeah, and moose is delicious.
Yeah, it's the best eating of all them animals.
It's amazing.
A buddy of ours gave us a bunch of moose meat, and we cooked it just like a steak. It was delicious.
Yep.
Tender. Yep. Oh, my God, it was tender. It tastes just like a steak.
Now, do y'all have moose in South Dakota?
North Dakota.
Or you're North Dakota. I'm sorry. Y'all, I know they North have them. I know you have them in North Dakota.
Do have them in North Dakota. Every now and again, you'll get a moose that wanders into South Dakota, but not very often. So typically, no, we don't have them.
Now, how big, what will they weigh? They're not as big as the Alaskan moose.
Those are Shiras, aren't they?
Yep, Shiras. So they're you know, they're quite a bit smaller, but they're still giant.
Wow. So you're wanting to go, like, you're going for the experience, not so much the moose kill. You're going for being out in the bush and all that good stuff.
Yeah, yep. I mean, just being out in the Alaskan wilderness. I haven't been back into Alaska in quite a while, and I'm just, I was there in September. Up until then, I hadn't been back in quite a while, and I love Alaska.
What'd you do in September?
A mountain goat hunt. So I was shooting photos for Cabela's. I was out with three different hunters, and they all killed a goat. Was living on a boat for a week, and then we would hike up to the top of the mountains from the boat and get on the goats. And man, it was a blast.
What's that like? I gotta imagine that's not an easy hunt either.
No, it's not an easy hunt. But the nice thing is, like, the elevation isn't too bad because you're starting at sea level.
Yeah.
And your height, you know, you might gain, whatever, 2,300 feet of elevation, but you're only up to 2,400 feet, like, total. It's steep, it's really steep, but it's not, like, you can breathe, which is the nice part. You know, like, it's like if you're elk hunting in Colorado, man, you're starting at 9,500, 10,000 feet, and, like, you're sucking air the whole time. So, I found the physicality of it to be easier than, say, like a high mountain elk hunt or whatever. But, yeah, it's, you're dealing with some steep country and hiking up some stuff that is just almost vertical.
So how do you, I'm assuming this isn't just for your average hunter. I'm assuming that some of the guys that you were photographing were in shape and, you know, ready for the task. I don't picture this being an old timers type of hunt.
You know, they were all, I would say they were all ready for the task, but the average age of the guys that were on the hunt was like 68.
Wow.
So, yeah, we were, you know, it was just slow going up the mountain, but all three of them killed a goat. You know, the guy went with the first day. I think it was good that he killed a goat on the first day. I think it would have been difficult to get him back up the mountain more than one day or more than a couple days on the whole trip. And then the guy that killed second, he killed the second day, and his legs were just absolutely shot by the end of that day. ankles were buckling, and knees were, you know, he was just shot. And then the guy that finally killed, he ended up going up the mountain four times. Ooh. And killed his goat. Yep, four of the 5 days. Then it was great. He was a trooper the whole time, and we just took it slow, and he got it done. But yeah, it's definitely not a hunt for the mentally weak. yeah,
I'd be nervous as a guide that one of my clients is gonna
kill over dead.
Kill over out there.
How much?
Yeah, those conversations happen. You know, like. You feel bad, like at some point it's probably going to go down.
Yeah,
I knew a guy that was on a hunt in Alaska, and they shot a moose and a bear, I believe, or were going to, and they shot their moose the first day, and some other guys in camp were moose hunting, and they were going to wait and let them hunt two more days, and they were going to go to bear hunt, and they woke up that morning, and that guy said, "Hey, it's time to get up," and the guy said, "Oh, me and Chuck are going to sleep in," and he went to hit him, and Chuck was dead. Died in the tent, and he had to cancel his bear hunt and come home. He didn't even know the guy that well, but they had to keep him with the body at all times. And he didn't even know the guy. He'd never met the guy till the trip, but they were on this Scripps bear hunt. But he said, "Boy, it was a very, you had to lay there with a dead guy for 12 hours for, like, get a plane in there." What are those goats? What are those goats weigh?
They're pretty hefty. You know, like 250-ish pounds to, you know, I think the bigger billies can be upwards of 300 pounds.
That's a big-ass goat.
Yeah, they're huge. You know, like, I was talking to the guides up there, and they're like, you know, like, the website will say, you know, the average goat weight is, whatever, 180 pounds. They've, you know, they carry them out every day, so they've weighed some of them or whatever, but not a whole goat at a time, but they're like, there's not a chance that they're only 180 pounds, because they're a big animal.
What's an oddad weigh? Is it about the same thing? Do you know?
Aren't oddads giant? I've never gone oddad hunting, but I thought they were enormous.
I've seen them, but it's been at a quarter of a mile to a half mile away, going 50 miles an hour to a mountain. I don't know. I've never seen one, but I mean, I didn't know. Okay. But hell, a 300-pound goat's a big old goat, though. I think.
Yeah, I'd have to Google it. I'm not sure on the oddad.
I'm gonna look it up while y'all are talking.
Did you get any of the goat meat? How does it taste? I wonder.
It's good. Yeah, it's really good. It's tasty as burger. Like, it's really good, like, for like spaghetti sauce and that type of thing. It's got a slightly chewier, like, it's a chewier texture, like on like a steak or whatever. But it's good meat.
So what do they eat on up there?
All the lichens, like grasses and like little lichens on the rocks and the minerals and whatever. Like the real small, like tundra type grasses and plants.
Oddhead weighs about 250 pounds.
They're about the same. Okay.
Some might push through. That's what I was. I thought they were about that. That's a good sized goat, though.
Yep.
So they don't taste as bad as goats do down here that you just buy off of some guy that's raising them. These goats are tasting a little better that you're eating.
I guess I've never eaten a goat from down there. But
I've never had good goat.
Barbacoa's goat, isn't it, down here? Isn't that what it is?
Don't get me lying. I think barbacoa is the head meat on a cow.
I don't know.
Really good. So is tongue.
Tongue?
Tongue is excellent. Beef tongue?
Do you cut any of the tongues out of the animals that you kill?
He ain't killing cows.
I don't. Well, no, I don't. It's a mental block for me. I can't get over.
If you ever shoot a cow, then do it. But that's what you eat. Lingus is good. That's a Mexican thing down here. It's good. Lingus. Mm.
Well, I didn't know if you could eat a fucking elk tongue. I'm sure you could.
Oh, I'm sure many people have.
Yeah, definitely can. You know, like the whole meat eater gang and like Remy Warren and all those guys, they pull the tongues out of all sorts of stuff.
I don't know about that. I think I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
There's just, I got a mental block with that shit. I see the beef tongue at like Walmart and shit, and I'm not buying it.
We were somewhere and they had a whole fucking goat head in their eyeballs and everything. I thought, what the hell would someone cook that damn thing? And then everybody fights over the eyes because it's supposed to be the best tasting.
You eat the eyes out of anything?
Nope, I sure don't.
Hell no.
Eyes and tongues, you're out on.
I'm out. Yep.
What about the heart?
You know, I've eaten heart. I've eaten moose heart, and I have a heart. It's like a grainy texture, and it tastes fine. But I had a hard time just with how it felt like when I was trying to chew it up. It's a tougher muscle. At least from like the one time I've eaten heart. I didn't grow up eating heart. I just didn't have that as like a tradition, and so I think if properly cooked, it's probably amazing. But I typically don't save the hearts or the liver. I'm typically just pulling all the extra outside meat off of everything.
I think as Americans, that's just normal. We were raised eating hamburgers and steaks and roast and
right.
And anything like that is just so different to us, where other places they have hardly any meat at all. So, yeah, because if you're hungry, you'll eat anything. You get hungry enough and you ain't eating in a week, you're going to eat some beef heart if it's there.
Eyeballs.
Yep.
And eyeballs, whatever, if you're hungry enough. But we as Americans, that's why we don't eat grasshoppers and shit, you know? We eat beef.
Yep. We're pretty lucky to live in a land of excess.
We are. We're very, very fortunate. And if it's one thing we've noticed on this deal, is that even in our bad times, like the last 6 weeks, people are still eating.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
What, the murder hornets haven't made their way to North Dakota yet, I don't guess?
No, I think they're only in Washington right now, right?
Well, Washington's not...
Is that where they're... I don't know nothing about them. I know that they're supposed to be sting the shit out of you if they get a hold of you.
Washington's a lot closer to North Dakota than Washington is to Texas, so you'll see them first.
That's true. But it's still a long, long way away from here. So I'm not overly worried about the murder hornets at the moment.
I bet y'all's winters are cold enough out there, you'll wipe the murder hornets up. I bet they're not a cold weather hornet.
Yeah. Winter here sucks. It was nationally voted that North Dakota, like Fargo, more specifically, has the worst winters on the planet.
You know, if I had to pick another state besides Texas to live in, North Dakota would be on the short list.
See, but I'm bailing out at Halloween.
Oh, no.
As far as I go up there.
J- January and February to me would be when it get, if the cold is supposed to be cold in the wintertime, but when you get into February and March, like I just saw a minute ago that they're supposed to have 8 inches of snow in parts of upstate New York and Burlington, Vermont this weekend. That would get fucking old.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's 28 degrees here last night.
No snow on the ground, like, I don't guess?
No, not no snow right now. Yeah, there's a chance of snow Saturday night.
That's
crazy. I don't think we'll get it. But, yeah, it's typically it's not even this cold, you know, this late in the spring. But it's been just kind of a chilly, like a slow spring. Like, it had, like the winter wasn't nearly as bad as the last couple of years, but it just has not warmed up yet.
Well, I bet July and August is nice there at nighttime, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
See, it was 105 here 2 days ago.
Oof, yeah. And I don't do well in the heat. You know, I grew up in South Dakota and then went to school up here and have spent most of my time in the North Country. So anything when it gets real hot, I struggle.
Oh, it's miserable. The older I get and hot, just don't. It was horrible, too. It was 105 one day and 100. It was 108 and 103 for the 2 days, I think was official highs. In freaking early May.
Hot.
Early May, like May 1st. Miserable.
Yeah.
We may not not even have a 108 degree day the rest of the summer. I hope we don't.
It's miserable.
Oh, it's yeah. Once you get over about 103 after that, it's like, and when it's hot like that here, the wind blows out of the southwest, and it's like having a hair dryer blowing in your face.
So North Dakota doesn't sound that bad all of a sudden.
Nope.
No, yeah, not too bad
when you put it like that. So you're having to bundle up on these turkey hunts then, I guess. If it's in the 20s.
Yeah, wearing quite a few layers. You know, it's 20s at night and then whatever, 50s, low 60s during the day. So typically just rocking some sort of insulation in the mornings and then, you know, shedding as it gets warmer. But hopefully in the next, you know, week or two, it should kind of balance out a little bit and only be down to the, whatever, mid-40s at night. That's not too bad.
Now, can you hunt afternoon for the turkeys? I know a lot of states can't.
Yep, can hunt all day.
So you out though all day?
No, typically not. I, you know, most of the time I'm hunting in the mornings, you know, somewhere that I've put birds to roost, and then all, in the evenings I'm really trying to go out and listen or look for birds going to roost. That's kind of just the way I play it. I like to cover a lot of country and then try to pick the best option. Later, you know, as it goes later in the spring, I'll probably spend more time out during the day because there will be those lone toms that are out strutting around and gobbling for turkeys or trying to gobble up hens. Right now I'm typically just hunting the mornings.
So you cover a lot of ground. Do you call as you move to try to get a response or what are you looking for whenever you cover this much ground?
Yeah, I mean, the country's so open up here, too. A lot of times, like, if you can glass up birds, like, in the later afternoon, evening, there's a lot of times there's only so many trees around that area. So you're like, okay, well, they're right there. They're going to go roost right there. So I'll do a lot of glassing. And then, yeah, owl calling or, you know, coyote howling or whatever, trying to get a shot gobble back from them if it's late enough where they should already be up in the roost. Yeah, just covering ground, doing that, trying to get a response.
I do love turkey hunting, but
this
year it's been a weird year, like I said. But with the corona, like we had to push our hunters back a month, so it's felt different than it normally feels.
For sure. Yep.
Well,
have you noticed more hunting pressure than ever before?
Well, not here.
Okay.
Our area. I bet you I'm the only one that'll kill a turkey in our county. I mean that like does it with decoys and calls. I mean somebody might road snipe one, but
sure.
There's not a lot of turkey hunters out here. I can't think of anybody else that really does.
No, there's probably some guys on some deer leases out here, but we don't have no public land here.
And the river is all we have.
And actually, other than deer hunting, there's not a lot of do-it-yourself waterfowl hunters here. It's mostly just deer hunters.
Yeah.
But have you been seeing a lot of pressure?
Oh yeah, it's the most turkey hunters I've ever seen in this area. You know, and I know that those guys hunt every year probably for a few days, but it's you know middle of the week, whatever. Running into guys where they're like, oh, you know, we're just couple of dentists that have nothing to do right now, or running into some college guys that, like, you know, classes have been canceled. I've seen more people out hunting this year than ever before, which is awesome. You know, people should be getting outside. You know, I think spending time in fresh air is probably the best thing we can all do right now.
Yeah, that's no doubt. But yeah, I can see that. I mean, I didn't really think about the quarantine in public land, but yeah, I could see guys kind of flocking to it. Now they got time to do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What do you ever will you set out a Tom or a Jake decoy? Are you ever worried about that on public land, or do you avoid that?
No, I've never worried about it too much. You know, last year when I was hunting with the guys from the hunting public, some of those more southern states, I probably would worry about it more just because everything's so thick. But most of the time where I'm hunting at, like, it's such open country that if somebody sees a decoy or whatever, they're not going to sneak in on it because they probably also saw my truck.
Right.
It's not typically as big of a deal in this neck of the woods. But I, you know, down south, man, like in that big timber stuff, I would probably not be all that pumped about using a decoy a lot of times.
So you probably don't have a big problem with guys like walking in on you either, then, like they do down south.
Nope, almost never.
Yeah, I've heard some horror stories. We had a guy on a week or so ago, and he was talking about turkey hunting public land, and like guys will sneak in between him. They'll hear the bird gobbling because he's like, if the bird gobbles, you know, he's free game basically. But he's like, I can't tell you how many times somebody snuck in between me and the bird and shot the bird right out from under me that I called in.
Yep.
I mean, calling in a bird is hard enough. I couldn't imagine also having to worry about somebody getting to it before you could.
Right. Yep.
I saw something the other day. Guys were wearing orange, and it was a father and two sons, I think. And I believe
this was in Jacksboro, I think, wasn't it?
Was it?
I think so.
I believe the dad told the sons, hey, there's movement up there. And they, like, crept over a hill and shot, and they shot two guys. And the guys were wearing blaze orange.
Oh, man.
Oh, no, that was a different story. They shot them in blaze. They were wearing blaze orange?
Yeah, he had a vest on, and it had, like, blaze orange. But the guy, they didn't identify any targets or anything like that. And one guy got hit in the face. He kind of got peppered in the face. Because they were 50 yards away, so it just kind of, like, sprayed them more than it did just a direct hit. But
sure.
One guy, he got pellets in his leg and his arm and his face. He had a couple of spots, but...
Jeez.
I mean, there's some idiots out there.
Oh yeah.
So my people like you that cut their teeth on public land, my hat's off to you. you got a different trait. Well, man, we really appreciate you coming on here with us. I know you got better things to do than spend an hour with us, but we really do appreciate your time. And keep us in the loop with everything that you got going on with your van, and when Stamp It Forward 2020 launches, be sure to let us know. We'd love to help out in any way that we can.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me back on, and looking forward to keeping you updated on everything. And we'll no doubt be in touch.
Good deal. Well, you go out and you go kill a couple more turkeys. Stay safe in this time, and hopefully in September.
Plan.
Hopefully September you get up there to Alaska and get you a nice moose.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right, thank you, Sam. We appreciate it, and God bless you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Sam Soholt. If you're not following him on Instagram, you need to be.
Very interesting man.
Got beautiful, beautiful photographs. He's all over the place.
There's a group of them guys out there that have really capitalized on the Instagram and the photography and everything that goes with it, and I'm hats off to them.
Yeah.
And I say it's just a handful of them that are influencers that really are influencers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of guys call themselves influencers. I don't. Hell, we're influencers, I guess.
Very, very, very small, maybe.
No, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
A lot of guys call themselves influencers.
Mm-hmm.
Had a guy call me the other day. He was an influencer.
Come on. Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's he influencing?
I think he was trying to Democrat a hunt off of me.
Hey, I'm an influencer. You need to have me out.
That's what he told me. He goes, well,
really?
He goes, I'm an influencer, you know. And I said, well, I said, if you have a whole group of guys, we'll talk about it. Well, I was going to come up by myself, and I could send y'all some press and blah, blah, blah. First of all, buddy, I've never heard of you, which doesn't make you not famous or anything, because there's a lot of famous people. I don't know who the fuck they are. But I was like, well, I don't know who you are, so you're really not going to influence, probably.
Right.
And just like on our deal the other day, our Mount Rushmore deal, there's somebody posted a singer. I never even heard of the guy. So he was one of the greatest voices of all time. I've never heard of the guy, and I thought, well, he must not be very damn famous. I never heard of him. I mean, I knew who Adele was. I don't know who she looks like, but I've caught more trash, more hell over that show than anything we've ever done. And it was our opinions, you know. I don't like the Eagles, but they're a great, great band, but I'm just not an Eagles fan. So anyways.
Hello.
Anything else going on?
Nope. The NFL schedule releases tonight. I'm super pumped about that. Get to see.
It's on Twitter right now. They're releasing.
Oh, it's not on fucking Twitter. It's not the official one.
Yes, it is. The NFL is leaking out stuff all day long. It's not all at once.
Find the Packer one then.
They said the Packers play the Bears in Chicago the last game of the year. That's one thing.
Okay, well, that doesn't tell me anything. There's 16 other games. That tells me nothing.
Well, they're not leaking just one team. They're leaking all kinds of stuff just little by little, and that's what's going on right now.
You said the first game of the year is?
The first game of the year is Houston and Kansas City. Opening day, or that Sunday.
Oh, Sunday. Sunday night.
The Buccaneers are going to play New Orleans. Matter of fact, it's right here again. It just says it.
What?
About the NFL leak on that deal. There's all kinds of them.
Slow leak.
Mm-hmm.
People
are just now leaked right now that the final game of the year will be the Eagles with the Ravens on February 7th. I guess that's someone's Super Bowl prediction.
That's a Super Bowl prediction.
That's what the guy said. He said that the NFL just leaked this as the final game of the year. That was a joke.
Oh.
The first week one schedule, though, they do have that up right now. And NFL schedule leaks 2020. Texans at Chiefs will be Packers. Jags at Jacksonville at Green Bay for the first game. The Cowgirls play.
Jacksonville at Green Bay?
Mm-hmm. The Cowboys play at the Rams in their new stadium. I guess, is their new stadium open this year in Los Angeles?
I believe so.
They play there. 49ers at Saints. Bucks at Raiders. And they open up their new stadium in Las Vegas on Monday night, I guess.
I don't know what the hell you're looking at, because
right,
I see
right here.
I see Vikings Packers, not Jaguars Packers.
I'm telling you what it's saying right now. I don't know how.
You don't know dick is what you're telling me here.
No, I'm telling you what I'm reading right here. So, anyways, Dallas, Pittsburgh plays at Dallas on week three. Week one, Sunday night, is Philadelphia at Pittsburgh for week one. So, anyways. Weeks
we'll
one through four are out of conference equal. Weeks 5-6 equal place conference games. Weeks 7-10 are divisional games, bye weeks. Weeks 11-14 are interconference games. And week 15-17 divisional games. They're not going to have a bye week till week 7.
Who's not?
Nobody. The NFL's bye weeks are going to be weeks 7-10.
That'll help with fantasy football.
4 weeks of bye weeks. So there'll be an average of 8 teams off every week for 4 weeks.
You're just going to kind of get it. That's going to make
some tough weeks for sometimes.
Yeah. But I don't. You're getting your full squad more. You might have a fucking empty squad week 7, 8, 9, and 10. Because recently the bye week started, what, week 4 and ran to week 10 or 11?
Just about. And it was some two teams some weeks, some weeks 4 weeks.
It's going to be interesting.
1 year the NFL had bye weeks. And two teams were off every week of the season. The first week of the season, everybody played.
I see what you're saying.
But every week they had two teams played were off every week.
Yeah.
So it was a bye week.
Who was it recently that took their bye?
No.
Was it Miami?
They had that storm hit.
It was
and they
Miami,
took,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and they didn't get – it was the first weekend of the year the hurricane hit.
Right.
So they had
played 16 straight.
They played 16 straight, but – that's the difference, or not difference. That's what they need to go to, I think. Two teams off every week's not bad. But, hell, if you get your bye week, week 14 or 15, fuck, that's not a bye week.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to the playoffs, it's extra rest week. It's good. The new schedule coming out, they're going to do away with bye weeks, though, I think.
If they
go to week 17. No. The week set when next year, the NFL's going to 17 games.
Right.
And when they do that, I don't know if they're going to have a bye week.
This year, they're adopting the new playoff rules, but next year, they're – extending the schedule.
Yep. So, extra playoff team this year. Next year they go to 17 games. This year they're doing away with pass interference challenges. There'll be no more of those, which was a fucking joke anyways. Yeah. Now we're going to notice every game that you can't. You ought to be able to. But they didn't ever overturn shit anyways. Mm-mm. It was a waste of 10 minutes. It took forever to do them for some reason.
And the call came from New York, so.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm excited. Hopefully we get a good schedule for my Packers. So we will see.
I saw that. What was this? What was Steve telling us about the baseball? They're going to
start in July.
Are they going to play nobody in the stands?
Yeah, at first.
That's what
sports radio
is.
Steve Barber was out here. He lives in Dallas. He listened to sports radio the whole way up. That's what they were predicting.
If we don't have, if you can't go in the stands by July to go to the baseball games, this is going to be a long, long, horrible, horrible, horrible deal before we start going again. Surely to God, by July, you can go in stands.
I don't know. But, you know, like they said, owners are going to lose their ass on this deal because you still got to pay players.
I think they're
– nobody's coming to your stadium.
Their money is well, I think that's their break-even deal like the Rangers. The Rangers can draw 3 million people a year. They consider it a good money year.
Yeah.
So their TV contracts pay some, but, I mean, that's where they make their profit. So, yeah, you're right. And I bet they have some kind of insurance they've purchased. Lloyd's of London might go out of business after this deal.
Who?
Lloyd's of London. They're a big insurer, underwriter. Oh. I saw where the Wimbledon has paid event cancellation insurance. And I don't know exact number. Someone will correct me anyways. But I think $500,000 a year or something. Every year. And they've paid it for so many years. Well, they got it. They're getting a check for $38 million or $50 million or something, and it's equivalent to they've paid every year. They're way, way ahead now, but they took it out every year for the last 16 or 18 years.
Good on their part.
Yeah, I don't know how that works with the TV contracts. Like, to me, if I was NBC and I would or the NCAA, and I'd say, listen, if you want my TV contract to show my Final Four, you got to pay us whether it ought to be in the deal. With, if you know, if something happens and we got to cancel, we still get paid.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen. I know that I'm ready to get back to going. Texas has opened up a bunch. Oklahoma's opened up a bunch. Those are the two places I go. I ate at a restaurant the first time the other night.
Where?
At a freaking IHOP coming back 28 inches at 11 o'clock at night. So I'm playing, but we was hungry, so I didn't care. So I didn't go to Whataburger.
I'm just not in a hurry. I think we're going to go to Wichita next or Abilene next week.
That's the last place I'd go.
Why?
Why? Because I got 400. I'd go to Wichita before I went to Abilene right now.
Well, we got to go to Abilene because that's what's got our supplies.
Well, then I'd go to Abilene then. Whatever you're buying, they don't sell in Wichita?
Mm-mm. They got two cases of the tile that we're looking for.
You can't order it from Briggles? Mm-mm. Briggles getting some free advertisement. Okay. All right. Let's jump off here. Thank y'all so much. We'll have 3 shows next week. Have a great weekend. Be safe.